Hey, welcome to the third episode of the List Film Podcast. For the new listeners, we are basically a weekly podcast where we pick a topic and we list our favorite films of said topic. So I am one of the hosts, Ricardo.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Adam Scott.
And I'm Kevin.
Yeah, you are Kevin. So let's start off by talking about any movies we've seen. Who wants to start? Who wants to take that topic?
Well, it being that it was Thanksgiving week, I saw like three movies.
Well,
what I think I started out with Hugo, and then I also saw J. Edgar. That was a screener.
Oh, okay.
And The Muppets.
So, yeah. Hugo.
Hugo is amazing, but I'm not a big fan of Asa Butterfield. Like, I just, and it's not even him, it's the character. I don't really like the character of Hugo. The movie is really interesting, and if you love movies, then you'll love it. It's just a celebration of capturing dreams. Like, that's the whole premise of the movie. Movies are dreams captured, and Scorsese is perfect to do
that. Yeah. Definitely. And I have to say, because I saw it as well this weekend, I want to sit down and watch some George Méliès films because it really just captured how him specifically as a filmmaker was all about capturing your dreams on film. And I just want to watch those movies.
Excellent. Yeah, there's something really kind of geektastically magical about hearing all the other kids in the theater with me just marveling at A Voyage to the Moon. Or A Trip to the Moon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great. I was like, oh, cool. Little kids can still appreciate his silent movies also. It was great.
That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. What else did you guys see?
Did you see anything else, Kevin?
I saw The Descendants.
We did too. So yeah. We could all... Did you see that?
I did not see The Descendants.
Okay, so let's talk about The Descendants. What did you think, Kev?
I thought it was very good. Clooney was fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, Alexander Payne is just great at directing actors and really, really good performances. It was a very good movie. I actually started to tear up towards the end there. It was very heartfelt.
Jenny?
Yeah, I really liked it a lot. Yeah, I thought George Clooney was great. And the main girl, his daughter, she was really good in it. I'd only seen her in like TV shows.
Shaylee something?
Woodley?
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, she was really... I liked her in that a lot. Her and George Clooney worked really well together, I thought.
I want to see it. I like Alexander Payne. I mean, I like, Sideways and Election. Not a big fan of About Schmidt.
I see that.
That's just one film I always think about and go, did I? I watched it and I remember going, okay, but it never really stuck with me as a movie.
Well, it took me a while to finally get all the way through it because I kept getting to the same part and getting frustrated. I'm like, I don't care about this movie. And then finally, when I sat all the way through, I'm like, all right, yeah, I still, now that I've seen it all, I can categorically say I don't like About Schmidt.
I really enjoyed The Descendants and it's my second favorite. I still like Sideways the best.
I agree.
I like The Descendants second. And then Election, and then About Schmidt. But I really loved it. I would definitely pay the full price to see it. Again, our rating system, in case you have new listeners, it's how much you would pay to see the movie, or would you wait for DVD, or streaming. I would definitely pay $12 to see it again.
Yeah, I would too.
I would as well.
And what about Hugo? What did you guys rate that? Would you guys... Wait,
that's
a must-see in theaters, would you say?
You should see it in theaters, okay. But I don't know if I'd pay to see it in theaters. Again, what about you, Kevin?
I've been thinking about that as well, if I would see it again. I mean, definitely see it in theaters, and I've been trying to think about it all day if I want to go see it again for $12. It's really good, and the imagery is fantastic, but I haven't decided if I want to see it again in theaters.
Like, what would you pay to see it?
Well, I mean, the first time I would pay, you should see it in 3D.
Okay.
Yes. You have to see it in 3D. It's amazing. M.C. Escher, like, really deep 3D that just takes you into the movie.
Pretty neat.
And I would like to see it again on the big screen, but that $15 for 3D, because considering I don't like the main character, it's tough. If there was more Ben Kingsley, I would definitely,
oh, he was great.
Yeah, I would definitely see it again in 3D and pay $15. Like, if they do 3D at a second run theater, I'm there.
Okay. Any other movies you guys saw?
I saw J. Edgar.
Okay, so right. What's up with that?
I like Clint Eastwood. I like Leonardo DiCaprio, but I just wasn't feeling J. Edgar. I don't think it was the best script.
It wasn't. There was way too much going on in that movie. They did not stick to like a single storyline. They were just trying to throw in too much.
And it just goes all over the place.
Yeah.
That's the movie I have to. Did you guys see Warrior by any chance?
Yes.
Yes.
I just saw it this weekend, and I really enjoyed it. I wish I would have seen it in theaters, and I would definitely I'd pay $12 to see it.
See, I'm glad I saw a screener. Really? I wouldn't have paid. I mean, I was interested in it mildly, but I don't care about MMA or UFC. I just really like Tom Hardy and Nick Nolte and Joel Edgerton. However you say his name, I like him.
Yeah.
They were all the acting was great all around.
But I just excited. It didn't overall. I didn't like it as a whole. I liked bits and pieces here and there.
But it's all about Tom Hardy's crazy eyes.
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know, but they were pretty awesome.
He's got crazy eyes, and I feel like he was prepping for Bane.
Yeah.
Even back then, he was just kicking ass and stuff.
How'd you feel about the Muppets?
The Muppets is amazing, and if you don't tear up a little bit during the Muppets, you probably don't have a soul.
Now, I don't know if we talked about this, but are you a Muppets fan?
Yes. Like,
okay. See, I've never. Not that I'm not a fan, it's just I was never into... I never got to see the movies. I've never, till this day, I still haven't seen a Muppets movie from beginning to end.
Okay, well then you're probably not going to cry.
Okay. But I did. I do love the Muppets.
I do think
baby,
that you might have a soul, babies. Though. The Muppet Babies is good, yes.
You're like, yes, yes. Cartoons are good, Ricardo.
I do. No, I like Muppet Babies. I grew up watching... I loved the Muppet Babies. Okay, well, so I guess that's an amendment to my statement. If you didn't grow up with the Muppets... then it probably won't affect you in the same place. But this whole week was just a bunch of nostalgia for me between the Muppets and then the love of movies and Hugo. There's something else I watched. Oh, I saw Singing in the Rain on the big screen at the Arrow, really? Which I was really stoked about, as I mentioned, it being one of my 5 all-time favorite movies. And Gene Kelly's wife was there, Patricia Ward Kelly, and she introduced the movie and talked a little bit about it, and she was great.
Oh, wow.
It was a good time.
That's awesome.
And I'd never been to the Arrow before. It's a nice little theater.
Was the print good?
It was a great print, yes.
They're pretty good about getting good prints. The Arrow and the Egyptian Theater are pretty good about that. Anyway, should move on to movie news. Any movie news you guys have heard that you guys are excited about or want to talk about? I just saw the trailer for John Carter.
Really?
You just saw the trailer?
Yeah, I had seen a teaser, but I finally saw the actual trailer, so I really enjoyed it. I think I'm really curious to see how that is. Is it going to be just one movie, or is it going to be a trilogy? Do you guys know anything about that?
I have no idea.
I have not heard where they plan to go with it.
All I know is that the director of WALL-E and Monsters, Inc., is it?
No, he did WALL-E and Finding Nemo.
That's right, that's right. This is his first... live action movie, and this is a year
it
of
it looks like it's barely live action.
Yeah, it's true.
It looks like it's mostly CG. I think it's not too far out of his wheelhouse.
This summer is like the summer of like Pixar directors going into live action, because we got
Brad Bird
doing Mission Impossible. Well, it's coming out next month.
Yeah,
and then we have this guy, what's his name,
Andrew Stanton
doing John Carter. It looks cool. I want to check it out. And I keep hearing this guy from Friday Night Lights is great, but I've never seen the show, so I cannot tell you if he's good or not. But anyway, on to the topic, of the week.
Yeah, sounds good.
Sounds good.
All right. So this week's topic was top 5 favorite directors. So we usually do our top 5, and then we do a quick rapid fire honorable mention for another 5. Anyway, should I start? Who started last week? You did?
I did.
Okay, I'll start then. All right, I'm nervous. This list kept changing like every hour on the hour.
Yeah, I have a feeling with this list, there's going to be a lot of repetition.
Yeah, I think so.
You think so?
I think so.
I'm guessing.
Okay. I think for you three, probably.
I can think of it of at least 2, maybe 3 directors that are probably going to be on at least 3 lists.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I know Jenny's going to talk about Uwe Boll a lot. So.
Oh, sweet. I'm a huge Rampage fan. So,
okay, I'll start with my number 5. My number 5 is Sergio Leone. Does anybody have him on their list?
I have him in honorable mentions.
Okay, okay.
Ditto.
Well, I grew up on him, on all his movies, and they just kind of... He kind of ruined me for John Wayne. I don't get John Wayne at all. I don't like him as an... You know, I just don't get him because I saw his Western... I saw Sergio Leone's Westerns first, so he's ruined me for John Wayne. But I love Sergio Leone. I love the cinematography. I love the way how the movies are dubbed. And, like, they're just slightly off, and that's, like, a different character. There's something about that I love. That some of the characters are not even speaking English. They're speaking like Italian or, you know, Spanish, whatever their native tongue is. And then you have like these great voice actors redubbing their voices, and the voices sound amazing. So
I think that's a big part of why I love those movies. Yeah. Because the dubbing, the voice actors doing the dubbing are good. It's not like the cheesy dubbing actors. It's something like when I saw Life is Beautiful, unfortunately, I saw a dubbed version the first time, and so I hate that movie.
Oh, man.
And it's supposed to, I mean, it's supposed to be amazing, but I saw a terrible dubbed version, and so I hate it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, we hit it in a spot that's the big thing, that the voiceover is just so great, and the cinematography, the wide-ass shots he uses. I just love him all around. Clint Eastwood, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He uses silence very well, and he knows how to, you know, I just love how he frames shots. I'm just a fan all around. I mean, even when he started doing Westerns and he did Once Upon a Time in America, I'm a big fan of the extended version. I know some people are like, more than 4 hours, but I love it. I love the extended version. I think it's great. He makes great epics, you know? No movie's like under 2 hours, so...
He doesn't like to rush things. I mean, I love the way he paces out a scene because he sets up the characters and he just sets up the way the scene's going to go. So it doesn't need to be rushed through. He can let it breathe and it just creates tension. It just builds the scene and it's just fantastic.
Yeah. And I also like that he's the first director to ever use the first guy to film Westerns that actually shot, would film the gun coming out of the holster. And it would be one shot. It'd be like, gun come out of the holster, bam, the guy's dead. And it was all in one shot before it'd be like, you know, cut away to the guy being shot. But anyway, I've rambled on. I love him.
Was he the first guy to use Clint Eastwood?
As in Westerns?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, he was on Rawhide before.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right. TV show.
That was before.
But yeah, I guess, no, I wouldn't say that. I mean, he was on TV shows, so.
Okay.
Not the first guy, but the guy who used him the right way.
In movies.
Yeah.
Because he like made him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Basically.
All right.
It's funny. He had to go to Italy to be made. Anyway. Jenny, you're number 5.
All right. My number 5. So my list is going to be way different than y'all's. Let's just say that. I'm more of the people that other people know, I guess. I don't know. But my number 5 is Tim Burton. And I have very good reason.
Oh, man.
I know.
Someone's going to get punched.
Right? Okay. So
over Tim Burton?
I think so.
So my reasoning behind Tim Burton is specifically from the LACMA exhibit that I saw of Tim Burton, like, over the summer. It just, before I saw Tim Burton as just a guy that, you know, stylized all his work the same way and everything, but getting into his brain in this exhibit, it just, like, opened my eyes to him, because I guess from an artist's point of view, because he does like so many drawings and everything before he even does the movies, and seeing that he goes from these images to the movie itself, it just, I don't know. I just love him. They're all very stylized the same way, but it's just something different, something unique compared to other directors. I don't know. And I love Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands, so. And he did some of the really great Batman movies, other than Chris Nolan. So,
well, yeah, those are the only other Batman movies.
Yeah, those. Hey, Batman the movie.
Wait, no, Batman the movie from the '70s. Okay. Yeah,
I don't know.
And all those George Clooney ones that we don't speak of.
The one. Was it that painful that it feels like more than one?
Yeah.
Hey, at least he publicly apologized for that Batman already. So. That's true. Yeah.
I went to a Q&A where that was the first thing out of his mouth. He said, the first thing I want to do is apologize for Batman and Robin.
But he did say he would do it again. because he got to play Batman.
I know.
So. Well, I mean, it wasn't even entirely his fault.
It was not. it was not his fault at all. I mean, it's like, hey, do you want to play Batman? Sure. Who's directing it? Joel Schumacher.
Ooh.
All right, I guess so. But anyway, I have a problem with new Tim Burton. The last few movies.
I would agree with that.
He raped my memory of Planet of the Apes, literally. And
wow.
Yeah. And I'm not. That scarred me. You know,
so that one
I can't
movie?
Look at his face without, you know, getting into the fetal position and thinking he killed the apes.
But see, then you have to go back and look at Ed Wood and just look at Ed Wood and go, that is an amazing movie right there.
That's true. That's true. That's one of my favorite movies. And Ed Wood is awesome. But Planet of the Apes, Edward says, I mean, what's the other movie that I hated?
Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Sweeney Todd.
I like Sweeney Todd. But
I think I understand him being on the list, though, because did you see all of those movies still because his name was on them?
Yes, yes.
So,
I did. That's true.
I mean,
you'll
go see a movie, even if you're wary of it, just because his name is attached to it. That's why he's an honorable mention for me, because even after Alice in Wonderland, which I didn't like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which I hated, I'll still go see whatever he does next. I'll go Dark Shadows?
Yeah.
I'll go see that. I'll go see live action Frankenweenie. Sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Guy made Beetlejuice and Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Ed Wood.
He's just an artist.
In movie news, I forgot to mention, they're working on Beetlejuice sequel. Did you guys hear that?
A Beetlejuice sequel?
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton?
Yeah, they actually, Tim Burton said, go ahead and start working on it, but you have to get Michael Keaton's okay, that he's going to be in it. And if he says no, then I don't want to do it. So, apparently Michael Keaton said, yeah, I'm interested to start working on the script. So,
how old is Michael Keaton now?
He's 83.
He's ageless. Ageless.
But no, I do, I mean, one of my favorite Tim Burton movies is Big Fish. Because it's so different from his other work. I really enjoy it. But anyway.
Yeah, sorry.
Planet of the Apes. Adam Scott.
So, for my number five, I went with Alan Smithy.
Nice.
Just kidding.
I'm like, he has a long body of work.
He does. It's very diverse. Yeah. My favorite of his is the first episode of MacGyver, though.
Is that credited?
Yes, that's an Alan Smithy credit.
Who actually, does anybody know who?
I have no idea who really did it.
Wow.
No, so my number five is John Cassavetes.
Ooh, he was in my honorable mentions.
I love me some John Cassavetes. I mean, he's actor becomes director, and he's just so good. And I love all of it. Like, even the one movie that I don't love, I love. I'm not a big fan of The Killing of a Chinese Bookie, but I'll still sit through it.
Yeah.
The long version.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's long. It's a long version.
It's hard to sit through. But I love, he just gets so many great performances out of his actors, especially like the Jenna Rollins performance in A Woman Under the Influence.
Yeah.
When she's losing it and they're trying to like take her away.
Yeah.
That's one of the most heartbreaking scenes I've ever seen on film.
I do love me some John Cassavetes. I guess when you hear John Cassavetes, you hear cinema verite, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that it's very the line of what's real and what's acting is kind of blurred with his films. And
he just did some really interesting, crazy stuff really early on, like in Shadows, with what he was doing with that, and workshopping it, and like, oh yeah, we're gonna film this movie. And just doing it. And the story he was telling, it's just, I love it so much. And then Faces.
Ugh. Yeah.
You can't, he's all over the place. And I love him.
And the movies he just acted in are also, he was amazing in. You know?
Yeah.
What was he in? Rosemary's Baby, right?
Yes.
And is it Dirty Dozen?
Dirty Dozen, yep.
He's amazing in that. So he's good as a director, good as an actor. I love him. Excellent choice. I like the choice. Tim Burton. Kevin.
Okay, so for my number five, I went with David Fincher.
Wow.
Just like with Tim Burton, when you hear the name, I have to go see the movie that he's doing. That's the way it is with Fincher. I really want to see The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And I love Seven. I love Zodiac. I love Fight Club. I think The Game is one of the most underrated movies out there.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you feel about Alien 3?
Here's the thing. I've watched Alien 3 several times. I read a book talking about the Alien trilogy, and it talked about his side. And then I watched the making of. And he turned what could have been like a huge pile of shit into something that's watchable. I mean, because he was fighting against the studio, and he was having trouble making the movie that he wanted to make because the producers and Fox had a movie that they wanted to make, and he came on, what was it, like a week before they started shooting to be the director, and he had to make this movie. So I appreciate what he had to go through, and I can still watch the movie. I still think it's a watchable movie. I don't think it's great.
Well, I enjoy Alien 3. It was the first Alien I saw in theaters, and it has the benefit of Alien Resurrection coming out after it.
Yep.
And yeah. Alien vs. Predator coming out after it, and yeah. It makes it look that much better.
It's true.
But, I mean, it just got such a great cast.
Who was the original director, do you guys know, of Alien?
I have no idea.
I have no idea off the top of my head.
Alan Smithy.
Alan Smithy, probably. No, he's great. I love David Fincher.
I mean, he's created his own style. I mean, he's gone from very stylized to, I mean, he just has this look. When you watch the trailer for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you go, oh, this is a Fincher film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can just see how he's developed that over the years as he's gotten better as a director. I mean, even when you look at his music videos, stuff with like Madonna, there's just some amazing shots in those music videos.
Well, he's got that crazy exacting attention to detail.
Yes.
That like I remember hearing during Zodiac that they were up into like hundreds of takes of a certain scene of a small scene, and it was driving the actors crazy. Especially, I can't imagine doing that many takes with Robert Downey Jr. Ooh. Who likes to improv.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's gotta be tough.
I was watching the making of Zodiac, and he uses the actors sometimes when there's an insert shot of like someone picking up a phone or picking up a book or anything like that, where it's just a hand or a foot. A lot of directors will send the actors home and bring in, you know, their stand-in. He shoots the actors. If the character is in a scene, even if it's a toe or foot or finger, it's the actor's foot. And
yeah,
he had Jake Gyllenhaal placing just a book down
on the car seat.
On the car seat, and they were on like take 35.
Yeah,
so.
And just the look on Jake's face as he keeps saying, let's try that again. Yeah,
try it again. How am I effing up this? The placement of the books. How is this not? What am I not conveying, David?
But, I mean, that is the reason why I love David Fincher is because of that attention to detail. He knows what he wants, and if he's not getting it, he's going to keep doing it until he gets it. And because of that, I think his movies are great.
Yeah. I agree.
Definitely on my honorable mention. Yeah,
I concur.
My number four is... Steven Soderbergh. I love him. He's great. I love even the crappy films that people say they weren't as good. I love every movie he's made. I like the risks he takes. I like the fact that he can make a big budget movie, but make it his way. Like, I'm a fan of the... Okay, so Ocean's 12 wasn't good, but Ocean's 11 and 13, I really enjoy. They're fun. They definitely have his stamp of his director stamp in them. Even though they're big budget, big star movies, they definitely have his influence in them.
Well, I enjoyed Ocean's 12 more than I enjoyed The Girlfriend Experience.
Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah, no, yeah. But the thing is that I like the risks that he does take with that.
Yeah,
the
his fact experimental that, stuff.
Is yeah, cool. and I like that, you know, that he, like, bubble, you know? Like, yeah. Who'd make Bubble with no known actors? Just so I like him for the risks he takes, and then but when he swings big, but then sometimes he misses. But when he hits, you know, you have things like Traffic, which is amazing. I think one of my favorite movies of all time. And then he also does his own cinematography. There's something about that is so that I love the fact that he, you know, he could jump and do. He could be the director. He writes, he directs, and he does cinematography. And he's a great photographer, so.
He's a director that I appreciate, but he's not one of my all-time favorites. Like, maybe an honorable mention, but I don't love everything that he's done. And so, I mean, and I'm not going to go out of my way to see something just because his name is on it.
Yeah, I agree. In the same way.
I will.
Yeah, I would. I will.
I mean, after watching something like Che, it's just... You have to see what he's going to do next, even though he says he's going to retire in like 2 years. So pretty much
we might not. We went to see him. We saw him speak at Comic-Con, and he said that was taken out of proportion. He said that he got drunk with Matt Damon, and he said that kind of jokingly. And then Matt Damon was in an interview the next day, and he told, you know, he kind of exaggerated. But he's like, no,
damn you, Matt Damon.
Yeah,
Matt Damon spreading rumors. But I do. I Che, you know, even from part one to part two, it's very different. Two very different movies. Very different. Styles, I feel. But, you know, ever since I saw Out of Sight was his first movie I saw in theaters, and it was great. I love heist movies, and it was a fun movie.
That's just one of my favorite movies. I love, I mean, George Clooney and Ming Rhames.
For a long time, I had forgotten that Albert Brooks was in it.
Yeah,
he's but he's really wearing good. Like prosthetics that right. kind of make him look a little weird, and I'm like, oh crap, it is Steve Zahn. Steve Zahn, yeah. So he used a lot of great little character actors in a lot of his movies, and I really enjoyed The Informant, even though people didn't like it. I thought it was one of the funniest movies I've seen.
Yeah,
I wasn't interested in it based on the trailer, but when I finally watched it, I really enjoyed it. It was just quirky and really enjoyable. Yeah. And
the voiceover is the funniest thing ever, because what he's saying to what he's thinking to what he's actually doing is mm-hmm. pretty amazing. To hear somebody's thought process that's like that is pretty funny. Anyway, that's my number four.
I just want to say that I don't think The Limey gets enough love from one of his movies, and that's a great film.
That's true. That's true. The Limey, and then well, everybody kind of knows him from Sex Lies and Videotapes, yeah, which is great. But again, my favorite of his is Traffic. So,
Jenny. All right. My number four is another one that I feel like you guys aren't going to like. But he's Steven Spielberg. And it's mostly because he was the one that I feel created the blockbuster. And like,
well, that everybody feels.
Okay. Well, good.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that's why I think that you think that we're going to give you shit about this because it created the blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I'm okay with blockbuster movies. Some of my favorite movies are blockbusters.
Actually, it's number three. He's number three on my list.
So. Oh, really? Good. Okay.
Well, before this, I want to say that Steven Spielberg is kind of like, it goes without saying.
Yeah.
I take him, every time I talk about a director or people's movies, I'm like, well, it goes without saying, let's just skip over Spielberg or else we'll spend 10 minutes on him, you know? But I always agree that I love Spielberg. But go ahead. What do you guys?
I mean, I'm just the blockbusters in general. He has more blockbusters than any person I could possibly think of. And just almost every single one of his movies I'm in love with. I even liked Hook. Okay. So there's that.
What about Always?
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay.
See, I love Always. I just said that.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he produce An American Tale? Was that a Steven Spielberg production?
I have no idea.
I want to say it is. I'm going to go on the limb and say, yeah.
Okay. You say that.
Okay.
I'll double check.
Yeah.
So what else? What's up about Spielberg? Tell us more.
Even
though we know.
I mean,
but
what's to say? Yeah.
What is to say? Yeah.
I mean, look at it, some of his earlier stuff and what he does. I mean, watch Duel and you just get sucked into Duel. And this is just like a TV movie that he made, but it's really entertaining. It's got the attention and you're just wondering what's going to happen to the character. And then you look at another movie like Sugarland Express. And he gets great performances out of his actors, and again, you don't know what's going to happen next in his films. And then, of course, then he's done Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade and Jurassic Park, and still created classic films like Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah,
he was executive producer of American Tail.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I am extremely okay. When we saw him at Comic-Con speak, I was giddy in my seat. I could not believe that he was sitting in front of me. I just, him in general, his presence, I don't know, he's just got that great father quality to him that you just want him around all the time. And I'm so excited for Tintin coming out. I cannot wait to see Tintin.
I am excited about that.
I just watched a trailer today. I think it's the second time I've seen it, and it got me a little more excited about seeing the movie.
Yeah.
Seeing the trailer in 3D really kind of sealed the deal, because it's before Hugo, and I was okay. I was already interested, but seeing it in 3D, I'm like, yeah, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. We got to see a couple of big clips, action clips from at Comic-Con with 3D, because the big hall at Comic-Con now projects in 3D and they give you glasses. So we got to see a couple clips of that in 3D, and it looks amazing, and it's a big summer. Is it coming? Is it a summer movie or a Christmas movie?
No,
what is that?
It's a holiday movie.
Oh, okay.
It's
coming out in summer.
Yeah, it's next month.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Next month, yeah.
Yes. I'm excited about that.
I love all his collaborations, too, that he does with people. Like this one with Peter Jackson, and he just can work with almost anyone and make it good. I don't know.
I do like me when he puts his hand in, somebody else's food. And wow, that's a crazy analogy.
That's a little bit of a mixed metaphor.
Yeah, that was a crazy mixed metaphor. Why would he put his hand in people's food? That's totally...
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
He's like Craig Robinson.
Yeah. And, no, I do like when he collaborates. I like what he did with J.J. Abrams. And I'm a fan of Super 8, even though Super 8 was just is this how you would do it, Spielberg? You know, I felt like that was the whole like movie. Like, how would Spielberg do it? Okay, let's go watch E.T. and then do it. Okay, I got it. This is how we're going to do it. But anyway, I do love his collaborations. So. Mm-hmm.
And I do love Spielberg, and I agree. He's an honorable mention for me, because like Ricardo, I figured it goes without saying. And by the way, now that we're looking at people, Sam McMurray was the character actor from Raising Arizona, who we couldn't remember last episode.
That's right.
Who was on the Tracy Ullman show, yeah. Who we all love. Sam McMurray. IMDb him. He's great.
So if you don't get that, go back and watch our last episode. But see, we'll correct ourselves, you know, 5 episodes in, and we'll
remember. Yeah, remember. By the way, I was wrong about that, saying Children of Paradise, that Brian had seen it. He has not seen Children of Paradise. I'll go on record so everyone in the world can know.
So, thank you so much. That was from our first episode, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, it's back to, where are we at? Adam Scott?
All right, so it's my turn. I'm guessing this is one that's going to pop up at least 2 more times. Quentin Tarantino.
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
He's in my honorable mention.
All right, but, cool. Yeah. Then I don't feel bad about this. Yeah, he's my number 4. I'll see anything that he does. I've loved everything that he's done. He's Quentin Tarantino. He's like the uber movie geek. I don't have any problems with him.
I'm going to sound like a dick. I do have problems with him. I have problems with him. The thing is, I enjoy every movie he's made. I really enjoy it. I rewatch them. They're really fun. But I feel like... I mean, what he does, it's a talent onto itself, but I feel like he's seen so many movies, I feel like he's like, okay, I'll do this like this.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, well, I've heard that's how he directs. Like, yeah. He'll tell you, like, it's like this from this scene and that from this scene. And
yeah, so that's a skill unto itself, but I feel like he's a new type of director that, I don't know, I just, there's something about the fact that I just want to see a truly original Quentin Tarantino movie.
See, which that's...
we haven't seen since Reservoir Dogs, I feel.
Okay, well, I was going to say, part of the reason why I love him so much is because even his truly original quote-unquote movies are just such pastiches of everything else that he loves.
Yeah.
And it's just like seeing someone project all of your favorite things onto the screen.
Yeah, it's okay to have influences, I think. And that's what they are to him, right? I mean, they're like influences.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can't... It's really hard to come up with your own stuff sometimes. Completely original.
Well, I mean, especially at this point in time.
Yeah, everything's been done.
But he was also, he was a gateway director, just introducing me to things that I wasn't necessarily... Because, I mean, I grew up watching Sergio Leone, but I feel like Tarantino was more of the gateway to Scorsese. Was like, I had seen some Martin Scorsese, but Tarantino helped guide me there.
I could see that.
Okay. No, yeah. I do like him for that. That more young people... find movies because of Tarantino.
Right,
because
I think I was 11 when Pulp Fiction came out.
Oh, wow. So okay. You like, and then you went to see the man rape. Did you go see it in theaters? Yes,
I did. My whole family.
Wow.
Whole family. Me, mom, dad, my little brother.
Wow.
Yeah, we didn't have problems with R-rated movies.
We didn't either, but...
We didn't either,
yeah.
Still, it's fun to hear those stories.
It's still awkward to see with your parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it wasn't as awkward as the time when I rented From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh yeah.
It comes to the Cheech Marin in front of the titty twister, listing all the different types of pussy that you can get. Well, my mom turning to me and asking, who recommended this movie to you?
Well, in all fairness, that was my question all the time. Like, how many different types of pussy are there? And he answered the question.
That's true.
It's good to know.
All kinds. But where are we at? Number 4?
Yes, that's me. So my number 4, I'm going to list them together, but most people would say that on the film is actually listed as Joel, but I'm actually going with the Coen brothers as my number 4.
That's my number 1. Yeah.
Oh, they...
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention, yeah.
So even though Joel is technically listed on most of their movies, Ethan did co-direct with Joel, so I say the Coen brothers. I can't think of a single, except for 2 of their movies that I'm not fans of, and those are 2 movies that they adapted. Anything that they've done original, I've loved. And they've done everything from a thriller and done it really well to a screwball comedy. And they do these movies really well. The way they don't use music, like if you watch No Country for Old Men and realize that there's no music throughout that movie, is fantastic because of the way they build the tension in those scenes and just the way they pace the movie. for a while, Miller's Crossing was, I think, just one of my favorite movies of all time. Some of the scenes in that film are just fantastic. The images in the woods where he's got the guy on his knees and he's just the guy's begging for his life, fantastic. I just love the way they pace their films. I love the way they create tension. I actually didn't see Blood Simple until about a year ago, and Emmett Walsh, his performance in that film is, he's so fucking crazy and it's fantastic.
I like Emmett Walsh in Raising Arizona.
Yeah,
he plays his boss. Awesome.
I like Emmett Walsh.
Yeah. In anything. No, that's true. That's just great.
That's true.
With the Coen brothers, I love everything for the most part. But then it gets to the point where it's like I'll see anything just because someone's directing it. And then A Serious Man came out, and I had no interest in seeing that movie.
Really?
And I started watching it once, and I didn't finish. I was like 5 minutes in. I'm like, I don't really care.
Actually, I loved A Serious Man.
But I love everything else. I mean, Raising Arizona, Big Lebowski, they're great. There was just something about that one and what Lady Killers.
Oh no, Lady Killers! Mm. Don't. Yeah, we're not going to bring up Intolerable Cruelty. See, and Lady Killers. Yeah,
I'll take Lady Killers, but I won't take Intolerable Cruelty. Lady Killers. At least you have Tom Hanks doing that crazy ass character. Yeah. That's somewhat entertaining. So
somewhat.
No, not really.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
All right.
Yeah.
But at least it's not Intolerable Cruelty. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I love all their movies. I love what was the black and white one that
Man Who Wasn't There.
The Man Who Wasn't There. Fantastic. Yeah. Great cinematography.
Yeah, yeah. Which is Roger Deakins do all their movies or
I don't know about their last ones, because I don't think he did No Country, and I don't think he did A Serious Man. But
I think he did No Country.
No Country? Okay.
But I don't know about
Because he's
Man.
Been their main
yeah.
Cinematographer for most of the movies.
And I love hearing the old stories about like them and like Hudsucker Proxy and stuff like that. And they were like friends with Sam Raimi, right?
Well, they lived together mm-hmm. for a while, and they kind of helped him make movies. He helped them make movies.
That's right. That's right. It's good to hear that, like, the people knew each other way back then. They're like, really? And you kind of see, like, influences. Like, you're like, oh, I could see Sam Raimi's influence. And didn't Sam Raimi also write
Hudson Proxy? He co-wrote it with them.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So
yeah.
I like seeing that little influence.
Hold on. This is a random Roger Deakins fact. Did you know he shot End Time?
Yes.
The only reason I was interested in seeing that movie is because of his cinematography.
And it looked great. It looked
I
really
just
great.
I saw that. I mean, yeah, it does look great. And I'm mildly interested in seeing that movie, but that's random.
Jenny and I
saw it. It was interesting.
It was interesting. It felt like there was two concepts.
Modern day Robin Hood.
Yeah. It was like modern day Robin Hood, and then he had that whole like not aging concept that he kind of was like, oh, cool, two cool concepts, and then they went nowhere.
Mm-hmm. That sucks.
Yeah. I wish they'd explained it a little bit better too. Yeah.
Like, and then that's the thing that they didn't really explain that. Like, they just, well, now you could live forever. So anyway, but corruption, you know. So I wait for Netflix streaming.
Sounds good.
Don't pay for it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Coen Brothers, love them.
Cult classics.
Yes.
Yeah. For sure.
The Big Lebowski.
Oh.
Favorite.
Where are we at now? 3, 4. We're at 3.
We're at 3.
3 to you.
3 to me. So my number 3, I love this guy. I love this guy. He's recently gone all digital. He's not filming on film, but I still love him. I wasn't sure if I liked that idea, but I love the man. So he can do no wrong, Michael Mann. That's my number 3. I've enjoyed every movie he's made. Yes, even Miami Vice. They should have named it something else. They should have named it something else, but I enjoyed it. Just, I didn't like the fact that they named it Miami Vice. It wasn't a Miami Vice movie. Like, anybody that was a fan of Miami Vice going to see the new one, the movie, is sorely disappointed because it has nothing to do with a TV show.
Not a lot of pastels.
Yes, yep. Yes.
That's true.
And I enjoy the fact that he said, well, if somebody's going to remake that, one of my shows, it might as well be me. And I like that, but it had nothing to do with the original, and it should have just been called something else. They should have just renamed it, and it was a fun movie unto itself, and I loved it, but it shouldn't have been called Miami Vice. But love all his movies. He did Last of the Mohicans, Heat, The Insider, very underrated. I feel like a great performance from Al Pacino. Very subdued. I think we talked about it, about The Godfather, right? How we missed that old Al Pacino, who's a little tamed. And he's great in that. And Russell Crowe with the makeup and the, you know, age progression, it's good work all around that movie. And of course, Manhunter. I love that movie. It's, I'll say it, it's the second best of the series. Because we don't like Hannibal. I don't like Hannibal.
Nope.
And I don't like Red Dragon.
And Hannibal Rising doesn't count.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't count at all. So, I'm a big fan. I love the way he uses color in film. He likes his blues. Let's go ahead and say it. He loves his blue filters.
Blue tint, yeah.
And I love that blue tint in every movie he's made. I feel like that's a suggestion. Like, they're like, Michael,
wait, was that in Public Enemies? Because I don't remember a blue.
It's in Public Enemies. Okay. Yeah, and I like the fact that Public Enemies is a period piece, but he still used digital. I like that because, you know, it made it different. It made it feel like a documentary rather than like, oh, we're trying to replicate what film would look like back then, or, you know, what it feels like. But it felt a little bit more real. It felt like I was watching a documentary as opposed to a film. And I love me some Christian Bale and Johnny Depp. So anyway,
I have to say, around his use of digital, Collateral, I don't think could hidden shot on film and look the way it did. I think the images and the way he captured LA at night on digital are great in Collateral.
And yeah. It's probably my favorite movie. Heat. I mentioned it in my favorite movies of all time, yep. Right? My all-time favorites. I love Heat. I love the way he filmed it. I like the use of characters. I just recently rewatched it after we aired that first episode, and I just love it. I love the fact that there's so many stories going on, and you never say, oh, that story kind of fizzled out. No, every character has like their own little arc, and it's a 3-hour movie, and you have like 40 different characters to deal with, and everybody has their own little arc, and has, you know, even like Natalie Portman's a little character.
Yeah.
She has, you know, it's a minor character, but still has an arc and everything, and just great writer, great director all around. Any objection to that? I feel like Scott's like judging me.
No, I like Michael Mann. I haven't seen everything that he's done. I mean, you opened with the one movie that I would have definitely called out, Miami Vice, which you stole my thought. Like, I had nowhere to go from that. You acknowledged it right away. So I
stole
really
your weapon.
So that was a good move. That was a good move.
Yeah, yeah. Well played. Because, I mean, I love Thief.
Thief? James Caan. Come on.
Great movie.
Yeah.
And just then there. Heat. It's amazing. Last of the Mohicans.
Last of the Mohicans. Mm-hmm. I hear that score and I just, it sucked. I want to go watch the movie.
Every time I see, sometimes people will post the Nike commercial he did. Michael Mann did for the NFL, mm-hmm. And they play that score. It's amazing. It's a good commercial. Anyway, Jenny.
All right, my number three is Chris Nolan, and he doesn't have a big body of work, but the movies that he has are. I'm a big fan of Chris Nolan. Everything he's done, and I love a director that can write and direct at the same time, because you don't see that a lot these days. Like, it's very rare, unless you're doing like short films or something, it's very rare that they write and direct it, and I love a guy that can do both. I don't know, and he picks the best scores every time. Those scores are just fantastic. I don't know.
He was in my honorable mentions, and I do love me some Christopher Nolan. Mm-hmm. The fact that the pool of people, like she said, that write, direct their own stuff is kind of getting smaller and smaller. Like, I feel a lot of directors, even like Soderbergh, will do other people's scripts a lot of the time. But I like the fact that he, you know, he's like, well, I'm going to do it my way. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm still curious to see. I heard he was working on a Howard Hughes biopic.
Yeah, I heard about that as well.
At the same time as Scorsese was, and he stopped.
But I think he's actually thinking about doing that as his next film.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd be jazzed about that. Because he's doing his later years, right?
I think so.
But I love me some Christopher Nolan. I like what he did with Batman. I mean, everything he's done. You know, The Following.
The Following is great.
That's one I need to see still. I need to see The Following. I haven't seen that one. But all the rest of them. He's just, his mind is, how does he come up with this stuff?
He seems very, very hyper intelligent. It's like, oh my gosh, I just get in a and get a headache trying to have a conversation with him about the intricacies of Inception.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and seeing that diagram that he drew that they posted, I think I saw it on Slash Film. They had posted his diagram of going into the dreams within the dreams, and it's like,
oh, wow.
he had written it all down, and like knew like how time slowed down and how the trigger effects would go down each level. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's just even Insomnia, I think people are like, Insomnia was okay. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Al Pacino's great. Again, another performance of Pacino where it's kind of,
yeah, a little subtle.
Subtle. Well,
and Insomnia, it was like a test. It's like, do this and we'll see about what we're going to give to you next. Because it's okay. I love the original better. But I feel like it barely counts as his movie because it felt like it was Warner Brothers just like testing him. Like,
yeah.
Go do this. And if you can do this, okay, then we'll give you Batman.
Yeah. And anybody who uses David Bowie in their movie is all right with me.
Oh, definitely.
The Prestige. Come on.
I love the fact that he loves to use practical effects and he doesn't want to use CGI. And I really, really, really love the fact that he loves film. And if he could, he would shoot an entire Batman movie in 65mm IMAX and just create some really beautiful images with Wally Pfister. And because the way film, if it done well, it can be just be capture an image is amazing.
He should have done a Kickstarter campaign because he totally could have got.
That's true. he could have got the money.
Yeah, like I would definitely pony up some dough for him to be able to shoot Dark Knight Rises entirely in IMAX.
Yeah, if they would have said, "Hey, Warner Brothers gave me this much money, but I need you guys to match it. All the fans just put in $5, $10." I'd be good for 20.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
So. But no, definitely love all his movies. Love the fact that he did make Batman, but in his own way. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It's funny that they gave him Batman, but they kind of gave him, even from the first one, they gave him kind of like final cut on it. Like, he'd say, well, go ahead and do whatever you want. And
he reinvented it while staying true to the character.
Yeah.
Because like Tim Burton reinvented it, but he kind of strayed pretty far away from the whole moral grounding of Batman. Like, exactly. He's killing people.
Yeah.
And I like how Nolan, he stayed true to that while creating something new.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how the Batman movies, well, we haven't seen the third one, but they stand as single movies. You don't have to see Batman Begins to understand Batman, The Dark Knight. I mean, The Dark Knight just works as its own movie.
Yeah.
Which is what I love about sequels or, you know, Godfather 2. You don't need to see the Godfather 1 to get Godfather 2.
That's true.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Love me some Christopher Nolan.
Me too.
Okay. So number 3?
Yeah.
Mel Brooks is my number 3.
Ugh. Ooh.
Yeah. This is kind of weird to say. When I was a kid, I kind of wished I was Jewish.
Okay.
I see that. I see how Mel Brooks would make you feel that way.
Partly because of Mel Brooks and one of my other directors that will come afterwards. But yeah, I just kind of always wanted to be Jewish because all the funniest people I knew, like, because I'm already black. And so if I was black and Jewish, I thought I would be like the funniest person in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think you would be.
I mean, Sammy Davis Jr. is hilarious.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. True.
Yeah.
He is.
But I love Mel Brooks. I mean, Blazing Saddles, Young Frankenstein, History of the World Part 1, Silent Movie. His list goes on and on. He created Get Smart also.
That's right.
He's just such a hilarious man. The producers, I love everything that he's done. Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
I'm going to go say this. I think political correctness killed a lot of directors. And because Mel Brooks, if Mel Brooks was born, you know, was around and young enough to make movies now, he wouldn't get the chance to make movies.
Oh, no. Blazing Saddles would not do well.
He wouldn't get to do the movies. We wouldn't have, you know, Blazing Saddles, you know, all the movies he's made. We wouldn't have them because you'd have, you know, GLAAD or somebody fucking complaining. Like, oh, you know, and like, just fucking let the guy make a movie. Just shut the fuck up and let the guy make a movie.
It's supposed to be funny. We're poking fun at our, like, he's poking fun at us and himself. He's poking fun at everything. It's not,
yeah.
It's not meant to hurt. It's meant to make us laugh because laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, it's not, I don't feel like, well, you tell me how you, like Blazing Saddles, I feel it's kind of like, well, it's kind of like, this is how it was, but in a funny way. Like, oh, this is how, you know, blacks were treated. So, but we're going to make it funny. Well, and how funny would it be if there was a sheriff that was black? That would never happen.
Well, Richard Pryor is one of the writers of Blazing Saddles, so that's right. Don't think it's... Yeah. I think it's a non-issue. Yeah. I mean, that's how it was. I thought it was hilarious. I still think it's hilarious. I don't have any problem.
It's very rare for movies to, like, be funny back then and for people to now see them and still think they're funny, you know?
Yeah.
Mel Brooks's movies, if you just see them now, I feel like people still think they're funny, even though they're politically or whatever incorrect at the time or now. It's just, I don't know, anyone can see them now. And for a director to be able to do that, it's like...
That they could stand the age well.
Yeah,
it's not the humor hasn't like you still get all the jokes.
Well, it's yeah, it's not it's not that topical. It's broad comedy in the sense that it's universal comedy where you can laugh at it from any point of view.
Exactly, exactly. I think if
you can laugh at yourself.
Yeah, exactly, right. Exactly. I love Mel Brooks. I always get confused. One of my favorite comedies is Young Frankenstein. Did he only direct that? Right. He directed that?
He co-wrote it with Gene Wilder.
But Gene Wilder directed it?
No.
No, he directed it.
He directed it.
And they co-wrote it together.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite...
It's fantastic.
And then High Anxiety, I feel, is like a lesser known... Like, I don't think enough people know about High Anxiety, where it's Mel Brooks does Alfred Hitchcock. And I love that movie so much.
Jenny and I got to see Mel Brooks... The double feature, remember, at the Egyptian?
Yeah.
What was it? It was Blazing Saddles and then...
Silent Movie,
which I hadn't seen.
I hadn't either.
Since I was a kid, so...
I'd never seen it, but it was good.
It was really good.
It's... I mean, people today, like the artist, I don't know how well it's going to do in a society where people just... A silent movie today, you know, I don't know, but... Like for silent movie for Mel Brooks was fantastic, and I loved it, even though it was actually silent.
Yeah, the Muppets reminded me a lot of Silent Movie, the new Muppet movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's interesting. Now I'm curious. Now I want to see it. Damn you, Adam. But no, great choice for your number
three.
Kevin, number three.
Well, my number three was already brought up. It was Spielberg.
Okay.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah.
So. I guess it's to me then. Did you want to add anything to the Spielberg?
I will add that every time I watch E.T. still, I will still cry.
Me too. That's my favorite ride. One of my favorite rides at the Universal Park.
I thought they got rid of
it. Orlando. They still have it.
Oh, that's great.
And he says, hi, Jenny. That's great.
that's what I love. I went to Orlando last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they took down the ride here at Universal Studios in Hollywood.
Yeah,
but it was great. It was a great little treat where you're like, oh my god, it's still there. And they still have those crappy cheesy little cards that they type in your name, and sometimes like they type it in wrong, but they don't care. They're like, what's your name? Ricardo. Okay, Richard, here you go. So, I like how they rename you,
yeah,
because it's too hard to write down your real name. But anyway, my I guess I'll my number two, let's do it. It's Terrence Malick. I love me some Terrence Malick. I just, you know, as a filmmaker myself, I really get inspired when I see, you know, a Terrence Malick movie. It's just the fact that a lot of people didn't like Tree of Life. And, you know, they even had those. Did you guys see those signs that the theaters posted?
No.
It's a great little sign if you could find it. Have you seen it, Adam?
I have not.
Where theaters were posting these signs that said that basically that it was not your typical movie. And I wish I would have pulled it up so I could read it to you. But anyway, it said that they weren't going to give you your money back, and that the theater was bringing you something different, and that you know, it wasn't your typical type of movie.
The no refunds sign.
Yes.
Dear patrons, in response to some customer feedback and a polarized audience response from last weekend, we would like to take this opportunity to remind patrons that The Tree of Life is a uniquely visionary and deeply philosophical film from an auteur director. Should I keep reading?
Keep reading.
Okay. It does not follow a traditional linear narrative approach to storytelling. We encourage patrons to read up on the film before choosing to see it. And for those electing to attend, please go in with an open mind and know that the Avon has a no refund policy once you have purchased a ticket to see one of our films. The Avon stands behind this ambitious work of art and other challenging films which define us as a true art house cinema, and we hope you will expand your horizons with us. Thank you.
Wow. That says it all, I think. I think the fact they kind of they basically describe Terrence Malick. You know, he's visionary. He's, I love the fact that he's the first guy to just be still. Do you mean he could linger on a shot for a long time, and it's saying something. It's not like, I don't think he's pretentious.
You really like stillness. I love stillness. You're into the Zen directors. Between him and Leone.
Yes, I
and like, even Mann, I think, has some really
awesome stark there's a lot stillness. Of scenes with like De Niro and Pacino and Heat where it's just like them. But the thing is, you got to get the right actor. You got to get the right script for that to work. And I feel Terrence Malick does that for me. Like one of my favorite films, Badlands. There's a lot of voiceover, but there's also a lot of stillness to that movie. And Days of Heaven. I feel like he's a poet who writes. It's like a poem that he films, and I just love all his work. And then Red Line, The New World, The New World. I wasn't sure about it. I was like, what's this movie with Colin Farrell? And I love Colin Farrell back then, but I was like, whoa, what is he doing in like a period piece? And so, but then I went to go see it, and it blew me away. I loved it, and I love the fact that all his movies are very philosophical, and they make you think. I can't, every time I see his movie, usually you talk about it right afterwards, like, hey, what did you think? All his movies are like, well, I know I loved it, and I know I saw something really different, but I'll tell you in 2 weeks, once I digest this, that, you know.
I mean, it's like reading, at times, like reading some good poetry. Right at the moment, you're not like, oh, I don't know how I felt about that, but you think about it, you read it more, you grab different meanings from it, and that's what his films are like.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I love me some Terrence Malick, and Jenny, should we take your number two?
Yeah, sure. I'll go right into my number two. My number two is Wes Anderson, and I have a thing for dark humor, guys, and he, like, is just one of the best at dark humor, other than the Coen brothers, I think. And
that's true.
Yeah, right. And his script, he also writes a lot of his stuff, right?
I think the only co-writers he's had has had Owen Wilson and Noah Baumbach.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman co-wrote.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, so he's another one of those writer directors, and I know a lot of people, I feel like a lot of people don't like it, but I love Bottle Rocket.
I think Bottle Rocket's great.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I hated it when I first saw it, but okay. I went back and I rewatched it, and I did really, really enjoy it.
It's one of my favorite heist movies ever. It's just hilarious, and I don't know. He made Bill Murray what I love today in all his movies. I love him because of that.
How much do I love Bottle Rocket? I bought it on Blu-ray. Criterion Blu-ray. Someone gave it to me for Christmas.
I gave it to you last year.
Oh, well, there we go. That's how much I love it. I requested that as a Christmas gift. But yeah, I love me some Wes Anderson. Sometimes he can be a bit weird for me, for my taste. Life Aquatic, was it you that I saw the screen?
Yeah, the screener we went to. That was
fantastic. I also feel that sometimes the studio kind of stifles him. That's some of the movies that I haven't liked of his is because I think studio put his hand in it too much. Like Life Aquatic, we saw the cut that was 2 hours and 35 minutes, correct?
Something like that.
And then when it came out, it was like 1 hour and 45 minutes. It was a big chunk. It was just shy of 2 hours. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So, and rewatching that, I definitely saw that. Oh wow, like that was a problem that like the studio was like, you got to cut 30-40 minutes off this movie, and it kind of hurt his story, I felt.
Yeah.
But no, I love the way he uses color. Everything has like a color theme to it. And
oh, I know, yeah. His style is beautiful. Did they have the director's cut? Did they sell it for that?
No, they don't.
Because I love Life Aquatic, but I never saw the other one, so yeah. Maybe I would like it even more.
That's a good thing about seeing screenings. I know some people don't like going to see screenings, so you have to wait in line, and sometimes like the effects aren't done, but that's a good thing where you get to see a movie kind of take shape. And I saw Public Enemies like 3 different times, and it was 3 different movies. Like the first time was like an action movie. The second time was like a full on love story. So yes, back to Wes Anderson. I love how every movie has its like color palette, and you know,
mm-hmm.
Well, and yeah. He's another exacting director.
Yes.
Extreme sense of detail.
Every shot is very detailed and very like thought out, and there's no, I don't feel like I see a shot of Wes Anderson's that I'm like, oh, that was unnecessary. Like, oh, like everything is beautiful. I want to live in Wes Anderson's world. They should build his own park at Disneyland, the Wes Anderson park.
So, I mean, yeah. Plus like deadpan humor itself can be hard to do, and mm-hmm. when he's on, he's on, and it's really good.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I love it when it's done right.
Does anybody know what he's doing next? No,
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he's announced anything.
Fantastic Fox, pull me right back in. I'm ready to see whatever he does next.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. I forgot he did that. Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. That's such a funny, like, even for kids. Like, I know, like, my nieces love that movie, and I mean, I enjoyed it a lot, and I thought it was a lot of kid humor and adult humor.
Yeah.
I think I saw that twice in the same weekend. Like the week I was it's a Thanksgiving movie, wasn't it? Some
yeah.
holiday.
Yeah, I think so.
And I was down visiting family, and I went with my brother and saw it twice. And I think it was his third time because he saw it both times with
oh,
me.
Oh wow. It's amazing. It's stop motion. It's simple. You know, it's not, but even in the fact that he did stop motion, you could still feel like his hand in like the colors he used. It was a very much Wes Anderson.
Really? So he's got something on IMDb called Moonrise Kingdom.
Hmm.
And Bruce Willis and Edward Norton.
And oh, Bill Murray and Tilda Swinton. Yeah. I've seen pictures of this online. Yes. It looks crazy. It's like, it takes place in a camp or something, like a kid's camp.
A pair of lovers flee their New England town, which causes a local search party to fan out and find them.
So maybe I'm wrong.
Interesting.
I don't know. But anyway, I can't wait to see his new movies.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see Bruce Willis in a Wes Anderson film.
I wonder if that's going to go the way of Cop Out.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Or he just becomes difficult.
Or Tom Hanks in a Coen Brothers film.
Oh. Ugh.
Could go that way.
All right. Well, we should put our bets in.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that.
We'll do a poll and see, you know, who thinks it's going to bomb because Bruce Willis is in it.
All right. What's the number two?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, my number two is Martin Scorsese.
Damn it, that's my number one.
That's my honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
Really? Yeah. Okay, I thought he would show up on more lists and in the top five.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised that not everybody has him in
the top five. Tarantino was my gateway, but Scorsese is the man. He's one of the directors with the most movies that he's made that I want to make a point to see on the big screen.
Yes.
Like, when I saw Taxi Driver on the big screen, it was a big deal. When I saw Raging Bull on the big screen, it was a big deal. And even his newer movies, like, I remember The Aviator was another movie that I saw several times the weekend it opened around Christmas or something.
Yeah, it was a December movie.
Yeah.
I want to say even once in the same day. Like, I went and saw it early, and then I was in a play at the time, and so we all like, oh, hey, what should we do tonight? Let's go see The Aviator. Yeah, we should do that. And it's like a 3-hour long movie. He's the hyperactive film lover in us all.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, I love all his movies.
But it's funny because now I could make this distinction, but as like Scorsese loves movies, he's just a film lover as well as a good director, a tour. But as opposed to Tarantino, where he's just like, he never really studied film, he never went to school, he just kind of did it. You know what I mean? That's the big difference that I feel like Martin Scorsese is so well studied, you know, as a filmmaker. That he makes truly original films, and he's influenced by other films, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure Hugo is very influenced by, like you guys were talking about, but he still makes truly original films. Whereas, because he's Tarantino, I'm like, I see it, you know. But I love me some Scorsese.
Yeah,
everything he does, even Cape Fear, even though that's a remake.
Cape Fear is great.
Cape Fear. Yeah.
Why even Cape Fear? I love Cape Fear.
Yeah.
Which it's just weird to me that he would decide to, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna remake this movie. It's just such a weird. It's a good choice. I mean, it's a big risk. Like, okay, I'm gonna remake this movie that Robert Mitchum is in.
And makes it his own.
Yeah, and made it his own.
And it's such a great remake.
It is a great remake, and I the other remake he did, The Departed. Very different from the original, and very, very different from even his other gangster movies. I feel it's very different. It doesn't even feel anything close to like Goodfellas or Casino. It's I love it. And course, I love me some DiCaprio.
I mean, I love the performances that he pulls out of people. I don't really necessarily think of Sharon Stone as a fantastic actress, but I will watch her in Casino and go, she's a fantastic actress.
Yes.
And he even knows that. I mean, there's the...
James Woods.
Oh, James Woods. Yeah, I mean, everybody...
Don Rickles, yes.
I mean, and then, of course, like his work with De Niro, where De Niro is turning out some of his best work that I think he's ever done or possibly will ever do.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I think the films that people don't even, like, sometimes talk about when they talk about Scorsese, like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which
I love. That's a great movie.
That movie is amazing. I mean, Ellen Burstyn is so good, and Chris Christopherson's great in it. Or films like, even like Last Temptation. I mean, yeah, seeing Harvey Keitel as Judas is a little weird. but William Dafoe as Jesus, he's great.
Yeah.
Okay, what about New York, though? Okay. Because I love the idea of New York, where it's the crazy stylized Busby Berkeley musical, mm-hmm. but with Martin Scorsese realism that's just so brutal. And Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli just tearing each other apart. I love that movie. But I love musicals. I think that's part of... that perfect melding of the two.
I would agree with that. I appreciate it, but I'm not a fan of that movie.
I mean, I'm not the biggest musical fan, but yeah. I can easily just sit down and watch that movie with not having like any hiccups or just being like, really? Do I want to watch this? No, I'll just sit down and watch it because it's that well done.
Yeah.
And I mean, Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Mean Streets.
What do you guys think of Bringing Out the Dead?
I like Bringing Out the Dead.
I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it.
I loved it. It's very different. It made me feel weird. Like, when I first saw that in theaters, it just made me feel a little sick. Which I think, I'm sure it was his intent, but I didn't feel good.
I feel like it's supposed to be a pretty unsettling film.
Yeah,
it's unsettling. The character is not going through some of the best stuff, so it's meant to be an unsettling.
And then another thing that Scorsese, I attribute to him, is he helped me realize that I actually do like Leonardo DiCaprio.
I love you. What?
Mm-hmm. When, I mean, Gangs of New York. I remember when that came out, I was like, Leonardo DiCaprio, what? Who cares? And I saw it, and I was like, all right. He holds his own pretty well against Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
Because that was true. How soon after Titanic was Gangs of New York? Because that's in my mind where it's going. I was going Titanic, Gangs of New York.
Well, it was The Beach. He did The Beach. He did Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think he might have even done another movie up before, in between. Maybe not.
He probably did. It was just in my mind, it was still Titanic Leo. And I was like, I don't like Leo. But then Gangs of New York came out. And I was like, you know what? Leo's really awesome. And then it makes me go back and like, What's Eating Gilbert Grape? I love that.
Oh, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I loved him on Growing Pains.
The one he did with the dinner. I can't remember the title.
Oh, This Boy's Life?
This Boy's Life. I love that. I love, yeah.
But him and Leonardo DiCaprio in The Aviator.
Oh, amazing. Is amazing. Great. Amazing.
Yeah.
I also love After Hours.
Oh yes, I love After Hours. It's such a fun movie.
I can't always pronounce the actor. Is it Griffin Dunne?
Dunne.
Griffin Dunne.
Yeah.
It's another Cannes riddle. Was it Dune? Dunne? Yes, Griffin Dunne. I love the guy. But yeah, so are we winding down to number one?
Is that right? Well, I still have to do my number two.
I'm sorry. Did I skip over you?
Yeah. Thanks. No, I'm
sorry, dude. I thought Scorsese was your number.
He was my number one.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That's right.
So my number two is Alfred Hitchcock.
Big time honorable mention.
I love Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, whether it's Vertigo, Psycho, Rear Window, Spellbound, where he gets Salvador Dali to help him do dream sequences that are fantastic and crazy as hell. North by Northwest, Strangers on a Train. I mean, he has done a lot of great films. I love what he was trying to do with Rope and the way it was shot. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's a really good movie. And then when you realize that what he was trying to do filming wise, it makes it great.
Rope is the one that's all in the one room, right?
It's in the one room. And then what he would do is he would shoot an entire reel. And then once it got to the end, he would like put it at a part where he could then shoot another reel and just edit them together. So the editing is just reel to reel.
So it looks like it's all one shot.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. And the way he uses music, the way he just creates tension. I mean, when a director can make you sit on the edge of your seat, that's awesome. And he does it so many times in his films. The performances he gets. I mean, just thinking of like Robert Walker in Strangers on a Train and how fucked up he is in that movie, and how he's just comfortable with just killing somebody is great. And then, of course, like Anthony Perkins in Psycho.
Yeah.
I just think of the last shot of that movie where he's not saying anything. It's all his internal dialogue with his mother speaking, and just the look on his face as he's talking to himself in his head as his mother. And then just the way his facial reactions are going to that dialogue are fantastic.
I really enjoyed North by Northwest.
Oh, that's a great movie.
That's a must-own Blu-ray.
Yes, yeah, I just bought that on Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's just so like epic. Like it just feels like a great like international thing. But it's all in the U.S. But it feels like you traveled everywhere with this guy. And I like the whole story. Was he the first one to do this? Where it's like, with a guy mistaken identity gets caught up in this thing. Was he the first guy to use that kind of like vehicle?
The wrong man.
The wrong man.
The wrong man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I want to say he did. But
I wouldn't be surprised.
It seems like something he could have borrowed from like a German movie. It seems very like a German expressionistic kind of thing. But he's so good. I mean, To Catch a Thief.
Yes.
I love that.
To Catch a Thief.
That jet setting Cary Grant.
Yes.
That's such a great movie. But then the big ones for me, which was also like the element of fetishizing movies because they were the Criterion collections that were out of print, was in addition to Spellbound, Rebecca and Notorious.
Oh,
yeah.
I love both of those movies. But Notorious, Cary Grant, and Ingrid Bergman.
Fantastic.
And Claude Rains. That's such a great movie. And it was so bizarre watching that, though, and going, they totally stole like 80% of this plot for Mission Impossible 2.
Did they?
Yeah, it's the same.
I can see. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
They're like, there's a lot like going on, I feel like that. I forgot one movie I was watching. I'm like, this is Point Break. What movie it was?
Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, that was playing on TV. That's what it is. I didn't want to say it. I don't want to be like, I was watching Fast and the Furious on TV.
It's okay. It's okay, because Fast and the Furious gets you to Fast 5, which I don't care what you say. That was an awesome movie. That was a crazy heist movie. It was not anything.
I was entertained.
It was nothing to do with street racing at all.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
I like how it isn't about that anymore. They're like, they're heist guys. But the one guy's kind of like, he used to race cars. He knows nothing about heist. That's all right. It'll work. Put the Rock in. I'm sure that'll work. And then lube up the Rock, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll all... The whole movie... Just have them fight each other.
Yeah. The whole movie, I felt like they couldn't get... How many bottles of baby oil did they use on the Rock? Because he was always just drenched and sweaty.
Well, I mean, the film was sponsored by Johnson & Johnson, so
I think so. But yeah, I love me some Alfred Hitchcock.
I also want to talk... I mean, we were talking about silent films earlier. The Lodger. It's a fantastic silent film from him.
I just recently watched an old, I think it was a Hitchcock movie with, never mind. I'm thinking of the wrong person. I'm thinking of Francis Ford Coppola. I saw an old Francis Ford Coppola movie with Jack Nicholson. But anyway, there's a series that they release like filmmakers' really early work, stuff that didn't get, maybe sometimes they're short and stuff like that. And I haven't gotten to the Alfred Hitchcock ones where they're before he kind of got big, but I did start watching the Francis Ford Coppola ones, and they're pretty interesting. You check. I'll give you guys a link and
have
you.
He's an honorable mention.
Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah.
Yes. Of course.
Oh, of course.
Yes. He's mine too.
Yeah.
Anyway, any more on Alfred Hitchcock?
Well, I mean, I could talk about Hitchcock all day. I mean,
he's got so many movies.
Yeah.
I still haven't seen them all.
I'm right there with you.
What, Suspicion? Is that the one with Joseph Cotten playing the uncle?
Yes. Yep. Yes. Yep. That's.
Yeah. Suspicion. I just saw that one for the first time, which I really enjoyed.
I still haven't seen the one that. It's kind of, it feels like Flight Plan. Like Flight Plan stole from it.
The Lady Vanishes.
Yes, I haven't seen that.
Oh, The Lady Vanishes is great.
I still haven't seen that. Which is
It is Flight Plan.
It is Flight Plan, right?
That's okay. Exactly Flight Plan.
Just checking. Yeah.
I'm so behind on my Hitchcock movies.
You're like, who is this Alfred?
Like, you could just Alfred?
Sit down and have a marathon one day.
I know,
and just
that's what I
be
do.
Entertained all
well,
day.
Well, if your marathon consists of not going out for 2 weeks.
Yeah. No.
I can do that too.
All right, so are we down to number one already?
Number one.
Okay, number one. Well, just to recap, my number 5, Sergio Leone. Number 4, Steven Soderbergh. Number 3, I'm lost here.
Wasn't that Michael Mann?
Michael Mann, sorry. And then Terrence Malick. And my number 1 is Woody Allen.
Ditto.
Is it really?
That's totally my number 1. I see. All right, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. So it's coincidence that it's aren't both number 1. Or not a coincidence.
I don't think so. I think it's because we were talking about this on the last episode. He's got a movie for every genre.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
That's what Did you watch the documentary?
I finally watched it.
Yeah.
Amazing, right?
It's so good. Yeah. It makes up for his not doing commentaries or anything.
Yes.
That's my only complaint about him as a filmmaker, is his DVDs are always so...
Not even trailers.
Yeah, just sometimes. The movie. There you go. I mean, but it's really all you need. That and this documentary, box set.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. The documentary definitely felt like... The few questions I had, like, oh, I wonder how he does this. Because I feel, I don't know how for you or Kevin, as a filmmaker, you know, trying to make movies myself, I've learned more from commentaries than I have from ever going to film school.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
right? And I always felt like I was lacking that from Woody Allen. Like how the F did he do this? Or how did he think about doing this? And it felt like it answered basically all my questions. Because it was a two-part documentary.
And it was like 4 hours long.
4 hours long.
Yeah.
Altogether, yeah.
Wow.
And he really went, they went movie by movie by movie. And they talked about every single movie. And they talked about casting. About how he recast some things, like he would film
entirely
mm-hmm. recast.
I knew that about September.
Yeah, yeah. And I do like the fact that how he evolved, how he was able to do like screwball comedies to, you know, fake documentaries to, and he I feel like even, you know, as he gets older, he's still changing, you know, like Match Point. Who would have thought of, you know?
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I just want to know what was going through his mind when he decided to write that screenplay and be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be comfortable with just killing off this character.
God, yeah.
And every movie, again, like Adam and I talked about in the first episode, that he has a movie for every genre, horror, thriller, screwball comedy. I was surprised to hear that he didn't like Manhattan.
That is, well, I thought that it wasn't that he didn't like it. It was that he didn't think it was a comedy. Like, it's not a comedy to him.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember him saying that he didn't like it. The thing for me about that documentary, the American Masters documentary, was that it was better for me to hear and see him talking. Because I had read, like, the conversations with Woody Allen and Woody Allen on Woody Allen. And it's very interesting. But actually hearing him talk about it.
See it. Yeah.
It adds something to it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love his movies.
The fact that he wrote every single one of his movies on that one typewriter that he still owns...
That's pretty crazy.
That's
yeah,
and the way he writes
still works. Really,
I like how he opened up his like nightstand, and he just had a bunch of like pages,
papers, right. Just
which makes me
papers.
Think like that. Like, was Match Point something that he just jot down at a previous point in time? He's like, oh, I found this. I'll just write that. And like, when did that idea come about?
Yeah,
yeah. Did you see the documentary, Kevin?
I haven't yet.
Well, no, he has his drawer next to his bed, and he took out a bunch of sheets of paper of like the yellow.
Table paper.
And he just had like notes, and then like he had like diagrams going to different places, and like he'd
and post-its and stuff.
Yeah, and he had post-its on top of them, and he'd like, yeah, like sometimes I'll take it out and I'll look at my notes, and maybe I'll write this one. But then he's like, no, it's not interesting. And then maybe I'll write this one. And then he went off on how he like had this idea. He came up with an idea.
Yeah, he pitched a movie that he just off of a note. It's like, oh yeah, this could happen this.
But maybe not.
Like, holy crap. Yeah.
It's very daunting as a writer to watch him do that. It's like, I mean, because I have ideas that I've just jotted down, but I can't just pick it up, read the sentence, like, oh, and know where the whole movie is going to go.
Yes. Where he does, I feel like he's like, okay, I know how it's going to end. I just got to figure out the middle. But he always inspires me. It's there's something different. And hearing Gordon Willis talk about like how he brought, you know, how he started working with him and it's just...
How involved he was in the visual process, like his understanding of the whole medium.
Oh, yeah. And I like the fact that he was already established when he brought in Gordon Willis to do Annie Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But he still took the time to be like, well, I don't know about this, so I'm going to just kind of learn from this guy. And I love that fact. And I like, especially in his later movies, the fact that he's using these crazy different cinematographers. I like that he's taking different chances and doing different styles. And I don't know. I love all his... There's no movie where I've seen that I've been like, you know what? That's not... Even Small Time Crooks where, you know, people would say, eh. I love Small Time Crooks. The first half is amazing. It's really funny.
I don't get the whole stigma about Stardust Memories.
I don't either.
I love Stardust Memories.
Oh, Stardust Memories is great. And I have to say, I like it more than 8.5.
I would say that. Yeah.
I can see that. Well,
you wouldn't argue with this.
No. I would concur. Yeah, one, it's more accessible, but that makes me sound like I need something a little bit simpler. But I love that movie. I loved it the first time I saw it, and I just, it's great. And Sharon Stone's in that too.
Is she?
She's right. The girl on the train across the way that kisses Adam.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right.
But the going from Love and Death to Annie Hall, that's that 1-2 punch right there.
Yeah.
I think that's what like sealed his place.
Yeah.
Because those are two of my favorites of all time.
Every time I think of like, every time somebody's like, oh, what's a good, you know, romantic comedy? What's a good forget romantic comedy. What's a good romantic movie? I think of Annie Hall. I'm not going to lie. It makes me laugh. It makes me feel good. It makes me feel every emotion. And for that man to create that many films in so many different genres and make me feel so many different things, I love it. So, anyway, anything else, Adam, that you want to talk about Woody Allen about?
He's got so many movies, and I love them all. Yeah. I mean, I was just over Thanksgiving. I was watching Hannah and Her Sisters again. I watched Broadway Danny Rose.
Ugh, yeah, yeah.
Because of the documentary, I was just like, no, I want to watch all of these. Like, you watch the documentary and you want to watch every movie that he's done.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm okay with him making a movie a year.
I'm okay with
that. Well, that's fine.
Who was the producer? Someone was like, maybe one every 2 years. He's like, yeah, I can't do that. And I'm good. I'm glad that he don't do that. Make a movie a year. I'm okay with it.
Yeah. And by the way, let's talk a little bit about Midnight in Paris. Loved it.
That was really good.
Yeah, I liked it too.
It was surprisingly good because I'm not the biggest fan of Owen Wilson.
Really?
But I thought he was one of the best, like, Woody Allen-esque characters.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, that's true.
It was a very different take on Woody Allen. Kenneth Branagh being the best one, I feel, in Celebrity. He got him dead on.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a different take. Loved him.
His films kind of come back to Hugo for me for the capturing the magic of dreams.
Yeah.
He's really good at that.
Yeah. Jenny, are you ready for your number one?
My number one was Coen Brothers.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. Anything you want to add to that?
No, not really. They work fantastic with their actors, and that's all you can ask of a really good director.
Love it. Kevin?
My number one?
Yeah. Or
my
no,
number
sorry.
One was...
We talked about number one?
Yeah, I think we just overlapped over everyone's number ones.
Yeah, because my number one is Scorsese.
Oh, then there we go.
Sweet.
Cool. So there you go. That was our list, and hope you guys enjoyed it. And just a little bit of business before we leave. So you could find us on Twitter. You could follow us on Twitter at the Film Podcast. Or you could send us an email or anything like that at www.thelistfilmpodcast.com. You could go there and I'll send you a link to our email. You could follow us. You can follow me at Ricardo Ultreras. That's Ricardo, spelled the regular way. Ultreras, Ricardo Ultreras, Twitter.
I am at Jhenigh. That's Jhenigh.
I'm unAdam Scott. AN_ADM. It's Adam Scott.
Yeah.
Just go to my website, shootingthescript.wordpress.com. That's all you need to know.
And you could find a link to that website on our website. So check it out. You guys review movies. It's an ongoing discussion on film on the internet. It's a good website. Check it out. And
thank you.
Kevin.
You can follow me at K Zuberbier, which is ZUBERBIER.
Excellent. So until next week, have a good week.